Thank you. Good evening. I hope everybody's well and that you had a good week. Normally, I started with what I'm going to teach you tonight, so we'll do it during the course of the class. And I normally read the Zohar, but I'm also going to discuss what the Zohar is. At that time, I'll read the verse from it. So this is an abnormal class in the sense that we're not starting out that way. But this is the first class where you're being recommended tools to start to use. And you'll find that these tools are useful, but strange, because they're based on the Hebrew letters. If you'll remember from last week, we spoke that the Hebrew letters I don't think I mentioned it, but the Hebrew letters are the first thing, the first vessel created by the Creator. And He created them as tools for Him to then use for the other creations. The Torah, when you read the Bible, in the first few verses, it says God said there would be light, and there was light. And we spoke last week of what light is fulfillment. The idea of speaking, there was no atmosphere to transfer words or sounds. It was the string theory, which is valid. And the string theory essentially says vibrations, harmonics, is how things come to be. The Hebrew letters have four basic components, aspects of themselves. One is their shape. One is their sound. What is the essence? Because the letter itself, the shape itself, is like a DNA. It represents a component. It represents an inner essence. It has a gematria, a numerical value associated with each letter. That's part of its inner essence. And the fourth category is some letters, some fonts, types, have crowns on the letters. And those crowns, sometimes there's one crown, sometimes there's three, sometimes there's none. All of that is aspects of the letter. And the fourth component is the sound, the song of the word. But it's really associated with the letter. Certain letters in a word have what's called trope. They're telling you where to pronounce the word, how to pronounce the word. They're telling you how to sing the word. If you've ever heard the Torah chanted in a synagogue, you understand what I'm talking about. It's a song. Or you can read it without the song. Part of the letters that make up words, and words basically are built for letters. And one of the teachings of Kabbalah is to look at a word and understand its external meaning, but also look at the letters as a component of that word. What are the letters telling you? What's the essence of the letters? For example, the word Shemayim means heaven. But when you look at the word and break the letters apart, you have a shin that represents fire. And you have the word mind that represents water. And heaven is fire and water together. Passion, which is what fire represents. And serenity, which is what water represents. Sharing, which is what water represents. These are different understandings and different ways to view words, but more than words, concepts. And more than concepts, reality of it's easier to understand it by looking at the letters. The Hebrew language is called the Holy Language. Every society, not just because the church was there and talking about it, or in the Eastern religions, but if you go into China, you go into Japan, or the Holy Language, they will tell you Hebrew. Where does it come from? Maybe it's modern day technologies and that this information is just available. Maybe it's the 100th monkey syndrome, if you're familiar with that. But basically, the souls of people know the Hebrew letters make up the Holy Language. The Hebrew language is a holy language. But the Hebrew letters are used in two languages. One is Hebrew and one is Aramaic. The academics will tell you that Aramaic is the language of the people of that time. They spoke Aramaic, they didn't speak Hebrew. They did speak Hebrew, but only in the synagogue, only in Torah study. Why didn't they speak it in everyday language? Every generation falls spiritually from the generation before it. Now that's a statement. Never believe anything I say. But test it for yourself over the next 3, 4, 5 months. You'll find that what I speak about is true. What does it mean that they fall spiritually? Children are closer to the Creator. They're new. They're unadulterated. They haven't grown to be an adult. They haven't taken in the values of the society they're being grown into. They're closer to the Creator. They're fresh. They're virginal. Whatever words we wish to apply, each generation, as you grow further from the source, is going to grow less. Each child, as it grows further from its source of birth, becomes less, becomes adulterated. But Western society teaches that you become smarter, you become more aware, you become more encompassing. And there's aspects of truth to that, but from the standpoint of generation to generation, we fall spiritually, we don't grow. The reason I'm explaining that, earlier generations spoke Aramaic because they knew on the level of their soul that to speak Hebrew, they could transfer metaphysical energies, both positive and negative energies. But if they choose to speak Aramaic, they don't transfer negative energy. Now, what does it mean to be negative energy? I'm going to give you a metaphor. We have a, right sitting here, we have a 220-volt air conditioner unit. If I plug it into the wall socket, what's going to happen? If I plug it in and turn it on, what happens to the air conditioner unit? It runs, but it doesn't cool the air. Voltage on a 220 plug, it burns up. It doesn't work. It's the wrong vessel. That's called negative energy. The vessel is receiving more energy than it can handle. energy that it knows how to handle. Put it in a 110 or a 220 salt socket. Cools the room. It runs beautifully because it's the right vessel for the job. The vessel is what finds negativity. If there's too much energy for the vessel, we call that negative. We call that pain. We call that chaos. Is it really the fault of the light? Is it fault of the electricity that the air conditioner didn't work? Do we blame the electricity in the wall, or do we blame the person who plugged it in? Cause and effect. There's no such thing as evil. There's no such thing as negative. There's vessels that cannot handle certain energies. And we call that evil. In Kabbalah, we define evil as the desire to receive for oneself alone. When Adam and Eve did the action that we refer to as a sin, they caused selfishness to be injected into the human race, into the human consciousness. That is defined in Kabbalah as evil. That's something you've probably never heard or never thought of in those terms. You ask yourself, how do I define evil? Pain and suffering is evil. The Shoah, the Holocaust, most people would say is evil if they say that it happened, because there's people who say it didn't. When we look at all of these understandings, it is not the fault of the light or the fulfillment. It's the vessel that isn't ready to handle that fulfillment, doesn't want to be exposed to that much energy. That's a whole different way of looking at the world. The first tool the Creator made was the letters. And he designed them so that they transfer metaphysical energy to the physical world. Prove it to you. Remember, I won't prove anything to you, but you will prove it to yourself. And this is the three tools I'm going to give you tonight are all related to the Hebrew letters. The first tool that I'm going to say to you, please do, and I know in advance, this week you won't do it. Next week you won't do it. 4, 5, 6 weeks, 6 months, you might. Because it's uncomfortable and it's strange. And it's something that you've not thought of. Every week in a synagogue, a Torah is read. It's not a book. It's a scroll. A parchment scroll. That parchment scroll has been recreated over the centuries exactly the way the first one was. The scroll has ink that is designed to transfer metaphysical energy. It has the fact that it's on parchment helps to transfer metaphysical energy. The shapes of the letters, as I said, was designed to do that. The sound, the trope, the chanting is designed to do that. Now, every week for 3,800 years, 3,500 years, since Torah was received as divine revelation, and that's another discussion that we can have, but tonight's a little, what I have to teach you is a little long, so if we want to discuss it, we'll do it after the class. The Torah, for 3,500, 3,800 years, however long, every week it has been read, the same week of every year. Now, why do we do that? It's a traditional, it's a ritual. For 30 or 100 years, I'm sorry?
It preserves your connection to the past.
That's tradition. And tradition never gets transferred past the third generation. You've heard the Chinese proverb that the first generation will earn the money, and the second generation will spend the money, and the third generation will return to being poor again. Tradition never transfers past the third generation. It's not tradition, but it's a good guess. Why do we do it? Because every week, starting right at sundown Saturday, there is a metaphysical energy that comes into the cosmos, comes into the universe. And every week it's different. And every week it has both negative and positive aspects. God is a merciful God. God only wants good for you. God knows that this energy can cause you pain and suffering. The cure is always ready before the disease. We learn this from poison ivy, because the cure of poison ivy is right next to it, where the ivy grows. The cure is always there before the disease. By reading the Torah on Saturday, you receive that metaphysical transfer of energy, protection against the energy that will come in during the week. Now, I write a weekly email based on a portion of the Bible. And everything in Kabbalah is talking about what's in the Bible. I write this so that you would understand the cycle. What is this energy? How do I protect myself? What do I do? By hearing the Torah, your soul is receiving that information. By reading the email, you have a logical understanding of that. But whether you read the email or not, if you hear the Torah, you are receiving that protection. So that's the first tool that I'm recommending to you. Now, certain synagogues read the full version. Over a course of a year, they read the whole Torah, the whole five books of Moses. Other synagogues, over a three-year period, they read the whole Torah. What's the difference from your perspective? You want more energy, listen to the full cycle. If you're comfortable just getting it, you like the people, you're comfortable with what's going on. For a woman in the modern world, going into an Orthodox synagogue, which is the only place you can find it being read fully, they're looking at a bachitza. They're looking at having to be separated from the men. And many modern women, rightfully so, are uncomfortable with that. So, go to another synagogue and only get the third of the year, the third of the cycle. But it's still better than nothing. It's still appropriate. Use the tool. It's available to you. Is it true for only Jewish people? When you go to synagogues, sometimes you will find people who are bigots and who don't want you to be there. It's not on you. Other times you will find people very warm and welcome. Experiment with the synagogues in the area. Find one that works for you. Go to different ones. But that's not the reason you're there, to socialize. You're there to hear the Torah. It takes about an hour a week. Saturday morning only. What happens if I don't want to go? What happens if I live apart from the synagogue? I don't want to be there. Hebrew on one side and English on the other. I don't read Hebrew. Your eyes are the window to the soul. You've heard the adage. What does it mean? Scan the letters. Hebrew goes right to left, as we'll discover with the other tools tonight. Hebrew goes right to left. Scan right to left, top to bottom at the top of the page. That is going to transfer that protection shield to your soul. It's done on a totally unconscious level. You're not aware of it happening, but it will cause you to change, because that's what metaphysical energy transfer is designed to do. Change your soul. Why do you need to change your soul? Because
appropriate vessel
for the light. Thank you. There's 6.5 billion people on this planet. There are 6.5 billion components of the endless vessel. There's more than 6.5 billion components to the endless vessel. There's every atom in the universe. There's all of the entities in all of the spiritual worlds. The endless vessel is endless. It's infinite. But in our world, human beings represent the endless vessel. We look separated. You're there and I'm here. But truth, I have 5 fingers on my hand. Is there a difference between this finger and this finger? They're all part of one hand. All 6.5 billion people. While the illusion is I'm separated, the truth is we're all part of the vessel. So if part of the vessel changes, the whole vessel changes. You want to fix the world, you want to correct the world, you want to make sure there's the atmosphere and all the ecology issues. You want to turn around and make people treat other people better. It's not about going out to those people and say change. You want to make the change? Change yourself. And when you change yourself, the unspoken communication between you and every other human being on this planet that we refer to as quantum consciousness, you change yourself, every other human being changes. Because every other human being has a relationship to you. Distant or close, that relationship, you change, they change. The vessel changes. That's what the letters do. First tool, the Torah. Hear it from the scroll. It's the best solution. Don't want to do that? Get a chumash, get a book with Hebrew and English, and scan the letters. Better to hear it if somebody knows how to read it with sound. But you never have to understand the words. And the more you understand, the less you're receiving. Because your understanding is your ego. And your ego limits your access to the Creator. What separates us from the Creator? Why are we not aware of the endless vessel? Because I think I'm me. Creator doesn't think of himself at all. Creator has a thought of creation. But he's just busy sharing. He just shares. He doesn't think I should share with this one or that one. He just shares. He doesn't change. We change. Our egos cause us to change. That's what separates us from life. The Talmud describes it as that each soul is like a rock. It's been separated from the mountain. What's the difference? Pick up a rock, look at the mountain, make all my analysis chemical, physical. What's the difference? smaller and one's larger. What separates them? Distance. Spiritually, what separates things is a different consciousness. I think of myself as I. That separates me from the vessel, from the totality. Do I think the ego is necessary? Is it necessary for me to think of I? If somebody doesn't have an ego, somebody can't say I. They're not human. They're not complete. This is part of the people with autism. This is part of those kinds of mental diseases. They're not right. Because we're in this world for a purpose. And that purpose is to remove bread of shame, as we discussed last week. The way you remove bread of shame is to do actions that cause change. Kabbalah is bringing these tools to you because we're out of time, as we discussed last week. These tools will speed your process of change. What aspects cause us to change? Things that are painful cause us to change. Things that are chaotic cause us to make changes because we don't like them. What's another one? I can choose to change. That's the path of Torah. You receive the energy that causes you to change, and then you start doing actions of change. Does it happen overnight? Absolutely not. 6 months from now, you'll look back and say, I'm not the same person. What changed? Why are you not the same person? What have you been doing differently than you did all the previous years of your life? I use the tools that I'm going to be giving you tonight. That will be what causes you to change. First tool, listening to the Torah Saturday morning, an hour a week. Don't have to go and pray. Don't have to do any of the other rituals. Be there when the Torah starts, leave when it finishes. An hour a week. Where to go? I don't know Sacramento. I can't tell you which synagogue. But you'll find one that's right for you. Or you'll say, I haven't found one. I'm just going to scan it myself. The third alternative is a $150 program on the PC and also now on a Mac. And literally, the machine speaks the words. Does the trope. If that's proper for you, that's the third alternative. Normally, I don't recommend you spend any money. Going to a synagogue will always be free. You may ask for a donation, but there's no obligation for a donation. Second tool is the Zohar. The Zohar is in Aramaic, which uses Hebrew letters. This set is an English translation, verse by verse. So I will read it.
Abraham, I didn't appear to him as Hashem, I appeared to him as El Shaddai.
Shaddai, enough. The word die means enough. Shaddai, enough. What does it mean? The theories now are the world expands, the universe is expanded, and then it'll reach a point where they'll stop, and they'll collapse. That's the theory. El Shaddai was the attribute of God that said, stop. Did he have to wait till the expansion took place? Or can he say it at the moment of creation and inject the consciousness of enough, it's sufficient? That's what took place. He appeared as El Shaddai to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But to Moshe, he appeared as Hashem, the attribute of mercy. Why would he appear to Moses in a different form than Abraham? Abraham should be a greater soul. And the difference is because Moses was the leader of a nation. Abraham was the beginning of that nation. But he was just one man. Communities are greater than the individuals, great more than the sum of the parts. That's what this verse is talking about. That's what we're coming to understand. The Zohar is the soul of the scroll, the soul of the Torah. What does it mean to be the soul? The essence. We tell a story, and that story teaches a morality. But the Torah is not about morals. It's not about ethics. The Torah is about energy. It's about the tree of life, Sfirot. It's about essence. Where do we find the essence? We find it coded in the Zohar. When was the Zohar written? It was given to Moshe on Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is the revelation. What was done at the revelation? We read it in the Torah. It says the Jews stood at the bottom of the mountain, and the elders stood a little bit higher, and Aaron a little bit higher, and Moses went up the mountain, and he heard the 10 Esther Dibrot. We call them, society calls them 10 commandments. But they're not commandments. A command, according to the essence, the Zohar, the command is idol worship. How do I come to understand that? What does that mean? Do you really think that people that work higher spiritually than we bow down to an idol, worship an idol that they built with their own hands? Does it make any kind of sense logically? But we think that. We were taught that. We were taught it as children. Abraham had an idol shop. His father had an idol shop. And Abraham broke all the idols. And then David put the stick in the hands of the biggest idol that he left untouched. And when his father came home, he said, what happened? Abraham said, the idol broke the others. So what, are you kidding me? This idol can't move. And Abraham says, so how can you serve an idol that can't move? This is a midrash. It's not written in the Torah. It's not written in the Bible. But it's part of our background. It's part of what we learn. It's part of Torah. Just as what I'm teaching you class by class is called Torah. We teach essence. We teach understanding. We don't teach children's stories. We use the children's stories to understand the essence. The Zohar, according to the academics, was written by Rabbi Moses de Leon in Spain in the year 1170. went into a cave after Rabbi Akiva was killed, his teacher. He went into a cave, and he lived in a cave for 13 years, being taught by spiritual entities, Eliyahu Hanavi, Eliyahu the prophet, Moses. The soul of Moses came to him to teach. He was taught by spiritual entities the essence of the universe, the cause and effect relationships among the spheres. He was taught all of the knowledge that is needed in our world today. And he taught it to 10 people, his students, one of whom was given long life, recorded in the Zohar, in order to write down his teachings. And his teachings were written down. And in the Zohar it says these teachings will be concealed for 1,000 years. Rabbi Shimon left the earth around 170. 1,000 years is 1170. Why was Rabbi Moses de Leon the choice for revealing this? Another question that we don't have time to go into. But the essence of what is the Zohar, it's the soul of life, the soul of the Torah, the soul of knowledge. And it's written in Aramaic, which will not transfer negative energy. So what is the tool? Scan the Aramaic every day. Now, where do you get a Zohar?
Library.
Number one, if you have it in the library, that's fine. Are you going to go to the library every day? Choice number one, if you want all of the information where you, like me, you want to understand, you read the English, because I don't read Aramaic either. You pay $450 and you get a set of 23 books. That's not the option. That's not the option. It's not the recommendation. On my website, at yeshem.com, on the right side, lower down, there's a link that says Zohar. Everything on these 23 books is online. It's in English and in Aramaic. It's not easy to read directly off of the website, but it's doable every day. We'll talk about what section needs to be done if you're doing it for free. It's available every day, 5 minutes, 1 minute, 7 minutes, 10 minutes, 2 minutes, whatever you want to put to it. But you are receiving the energy of Kedusha, the energy of holiness. What is holiness? You're absolutely right. It's bringing everything into circuit, into balance. Holiness is an energy that allows things to be balanced. Taking 5 minutes a day with this information causes your soul to become balanced. And if your soul is balanced, your life becomes balanced. The chaos doesn't happen. You don't do the things that create the chaos. Because you do the righteous, the right action. Not the left action. Not the action that creates chaos. This is part of the change. There's a third alternative, and this is the one I recommend for you. There's a website called dailyzohar.com. www.dailyzohar. It's also on my website on the right side. You have to go to the website and register. But every day in your email, you will get a paragraph or two of the Zohar. In the Aramaic, scan it. On the right side of those emails, he explains what scanning is and why you don't have to understand it. He writes a summary of a translation. He writes a summary so that you get the essence. What he is saying is the letters, the words, are communicating on so many different levels that I cannot translate all the levels. So I'll give you an essence of it, a summary of it. But that's not the reason you do it. You do it to receive the energy of Kedusha. You do it to bring yourself into balance. That's the second tool. That's for free. It's 5 minutes a day, or 2 minutes a day, or 1 minute a day. It's up to you. How much time do you want to spend? The more you spend, the more. Every day, there's a paragraph. Right now, he's running on email number 500. He'll complete it, email 700. What he's doing is something called the Tikkuni Zohar, which is, Rabbi Shimon wrote 70 explanations of the word Bereshit. The word Bereshit is the first word in the Torah. It means in a beginning. By the way, you know the translation is in the beginning. Is there a difference between my translation and yours? In the beginning means that there was a first cause. In a beginning is talking about every instant of every day. The world is recreated. What does that mean? It means that you are living a life from one instant to the next. Are you certain that what you remember happened a second ago is truth, is real, or is it an illusion? Did they change your memory that you'll never know? The only reason that they would change your memory is so that you balance different desires from different people as part of the way the universe is controlled and run. It's a deep concept that we'll talk about it at length in other classes. But understanding the Tikkuni Zohar is a very, very deep essence. To take this one word which has all of the energy of all of the Torah and giving you the 70 understandings, the 70 levels of consciousness associated with it, it's very deep, it's very powerful. This gentleman who's doing this, use the tool. Scan. Sign up for it. Scan it. I don't like his summaries. I don't agree with his summaries. They're not complete. He has an agenda that's neither here nor there. Use the tool. It's available to you. If you think that he's saying what's right, we'll talk about it. Then I'll give you my understanding, and then you can move forward. I support what he's doing, because it has to be made available to people. Use the tool that's available to you. The third tool that I'm going to give you tonight is what I had you print out. It's called the Ana B'Koach. We're going to start with this. The red words, the top, spell Ana B'Koach. Okay? You look over here, Ana B'Koach. It's called the Kabbalist prayer. It's not a prayer. It's the first 42 letters in the Bible. If you go to Hebrew Bible, the first letter of each of these six words times seven verses is 42. Concealed in the first 42 letters are those letters. That is the name of God, the attribute of God that he used for creation. That is the essence of creation. Now, what is actually creation?
meaning?
Creation is balance. The essence of creation is balance. When you are sleepy and have trouble sleeping, what do you need? To go to sleep. That's what gives you balance. That's creation. When you need to be energized, when you're sleeping, but you have to be active and you need the energy, what gives you balance? The energy. Creation, the essence of creation, brings you balance into your life. When you feel out of sorts, when you feel chaotic, when you don't feel serene, say this prayer, say this 42 words, which I will teach you. Sing the 42 words, which I will teach you. What I will teach you is a chant that speaks to my soul. Go to YouTube, type in this English word, Anapakoa. Bring up 400 or 500 videos of people singing the Anapakoa in different tunes, different chants, different approaches. One of them will speak to your soul. Learn it. Memorize it. Every week, we will start our class by saying this. Why? Because I want to bring the energy of creation into the class. I have no idea what I'm saying in any given class, because I brought the energy of creation. So I will be a channel. I'll say words. I have no idea what they are, because the energy of creation has given me balance to share what I have learned, how I have learned it with my students. That's why I say to you this every day. And I say this sometimes 20, 30, 40 times a day. I'm feeling a sense of not being in serenity. Bring in the energy of balance. Bring me back to that, because serenity is the way one should go through life. Now I'm going to tell you a story, and it is a true story, except my interpretation of it, which I will tell you what I interpreted, and I will leave that up to you, whether you want to believe it, whether you want to wait to see and prove it to yourself. It's all up to you. In 1993, I started to study Kabbalah in 1991, so very soon after I'm starting to study it. One of my teachers is Rabbi Berg, Philip Berg of the Kabbalah Learning Center. And he comes and he describes an incident that he went through. He describes it on Shabbat morning as part of his talk about the portion of the week. And he says he got a message while he was in Paris to go to Libya. Now, Rabbi Berg is an Orthodox rabbi. He wears a kippah. He has tzitzit. He doesn't wear a dress in black, but you know he's an Orthodox Jew when you see him. In Libya, is not friendly to Orthodox Jews, not friendly to Jews at all. Haven't been since Gaddafi was in charge there. This is 1993. He got a message, go to Libya. Now Paris, in the 50s, many, as the French and the English and the Belgians were giving up their colonies and turning freedom over to the African nations, a lot of those nations threw the white colonists, colonials, out of the country, or the colonials left because it was going to change and they were afraid. Many of them speaking French from Libya and other North African countries went to France. Where do you go live in France? You live in Paris. Many of those colonists were Jewish, but you know, majority were not. So he asks around his students, the community, the synagogue, I need to go to Libya. How do I do it? And one of the students said, well, I still do business there. The family lived there for generations. I'll arrange it. They get on a plane, and they fly to Libya. Now, he's got an American passport. Do you think Libya accepts American passports easily? Do you think they're not looking for a visa first? They want to know who's coming? Which, say, CIA spy is coming? He doesn't have a visa. He gets off the plane. That's before 9/11, so it's a different world. But he gets off the plane and he walks through customs. Nobody asks for a visa. Nobody looks for nothing. Right through customs. They get to the hotel that the student had arranged. And the student says, "All right, Rob, we're here. What are we doing?" Rob says, "I have no idea. They told me to come, so let's go eat something and we'll go to sleep. And we'll see what they say, tell me." The next morning, the student says, "What are we here for?" "I really don't know." "Let's get in a cab." He gets in the cab and he says, "Take me to the Palestine Liberation Organization's government in exile building." Did you know that that's where they had a building? I didn't know it in 93 when I heard this story. The government in exile of the Palestine Liberation Organization was in Libya. And they had a government building. They had the whole bureaucracy managing all the money that they were getting from the oil Arabs, managing all the terror that they did, and managing what they needed to manage. He gets out of the cab. Now, this is a government in exile. This is a government that is at war with the Israelis and with the Mossad. Anybody approaches their building, they got security guards. They're going to talk to them, right? They're going to ask them what's going on. He gets out of the cab in front of this building. Nobody talks to him. And he starts walking around the building, and he walked around the building 7 times. He was followed by guards. He was led by guards. But nobody spoke to him. He walked around 7 times saying what I'm going to teach you. In Hebrew, that's all he did. He got back into the cab, called another cab, went back to the hotel, picked up their stuff, and went back to Paris. He spent a few more days in Paris, and then he came to Los Angeles, which is where he was speaking about his event. That's a true story. Everything I've told you will be documented by other people. From now on, I'm telling you what I know to be true, but I will never be able to prove it yet. 3 or 4 months after this incident, the Oslo Accords were signed in Oslo, Norway. You know what they were? It was an attempt to make peace between the PLO and the Israelis. It was brokered by the United States, similar to what's going on, similar to what's been going on for the last 20 years. But this was the first one. Now, when the history books are written, if you tie together the minutes of their government in exile board meeting, I guarantee you that there was a board meeting in that building. And that board meeting was there to decide, do we sit down with the Israelis or not? Do we proceed moving forward with this or not? Now, in the Torah, in the Bible, you know the story of the plagues and the redemption from Egypt. And there's things in that story that don't make sense. One of them is God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Now, I told you that God is good. God is merciful. How can a merciful God force a human being to experience more pain. That's what the idea of hardening his heart was, because he then again said no. Hardening the heart caused Pharaoh another plague, caused him more chaos, caused him more pain. Is this the sign of a merciful God? The answer is no. So how do we understand the phrase hardening of the heart? And the Kabbalists come and explain to us that that phrase means he forgot about the plague. He forgot about the pain and the suffering. Why? Because God took him back to the level of free will. He didn't have to say no again. He could have said yes, leave, each and every time. But in his level of free will, at his fear of losing his slaves, at his fear of losing his economic power base, his free will was to say no. And free will is an attribute that God finds important, feels is important, and gives us as a gift. And we'll talk in a couple of weeks about what free will actually is and why we have it. But the essence of hardening Pharaoh's heart applies to motivation. As Rabbi Berg walked around that building, he injected the energy of creation, the energy of balance, into people that had been raised to hate, to people who were raised with the idea, we'll never sit down with the enemy, to people who were using their egos to fight for position in their government. He brought the energy of creation into that building, giving the people who had been taught to hate a level of free will. They made the decision to sit down with the Israelis. Now, the Oslo Accords did not work for various reasons. But ultimately, I'm telling you the story to understand the power of what you are being given. Every time you say this, you are bringing the energy of creation. Can I hold the Big Bang in my hand? The answer would be no. But with this statement, and if I have the understanding of how to use it properly, which I don't, the Big Bang could go off and my hand would be untouched, because it would be conformed to the energy of balance. It would know how to handle it. It would let the energy flow through the atoms. Yes, I know that sounds crazy. Don't believe a word I say, but please try what I suggest to you. You will find this works in your life. Some people, the first week they start saying it, come back and say, I've had miracles this week. And other people, I don't feel anything, I don't understand anything, and I feel foolish doing this. You may feel foolish. Continue to do it. 3 months from now, 5 months from now, when these classes are over, you'll look back and you'll say, this absolutely works. I don't know why it works, but it works. And you'll look back and you'll say, it works. Or you'll look back and you'll say, this guy is so full of crap. He doesn't know what he's talking about, and I've wasted 3-4 months. But you won't have wasted your. You'll find that it works. I have never had anybody tell me after the end of the classes, it doesn't work. What I've had them say is it works, and that scares me, and I want out of here. That may be your decision, but it will work. It will give you the energy of balance in your life. In every aspect of your life, your family life, your financial life, your health, in every not a prayer. We are using the words, the Hebrew words, to carry the energy of the letters. This letter is the first letter of this word. The second letter is the first letter of the second word. The third letter is the first letter of the third word, and so forth. The 42 letters, every verse has six, there are seven verses. Every letter of the 42 has a word. These words do not mean anything. The sentences do not make sense. If you look at what I printed out, the other pages back here,
when we get to the day of the week, which starts at
sundown, so we are in the day of Wednesday. Because it's Tuesday night, it's really Wednesday. And when we get there, we are going to jump to Yom Dalad, which is Wednesday, and we are going to scan this section. What we are scanning is the names of the angels, positive angels, that when we do it once a day, those angels come and help protect us. We don't say their name because we don't want to call them. We're not giving them a task, a specific task. We're just asking for general protection. And that's what we will do. So I'm giving you a heads up that we have a lot of, we'll stop and start. Now, I know people who do 3-hour meditation with me on the call. And I know people who do it in 2 minutes. Your job is to memorize it. Eventually, always use the papers. If you don't have the papers, have it memorized so you can do it. Because there will come a time when you're out of balance. You want to call it, and you don't have the papers with you. But if you have the papers, if you have the time, go ahead and do it. Now, we're ready to start. Another Koach Gedula Chemincha Tati Tzeruav Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadik. These six letters have a gematria of 506, which is the same gematria as the phrase Ahvatina, unconditional love. This verse is connecting you to the energy of unconditional love. It's the month of Tevet, so we're going to connect with the letters that created the month of Tevet. The letter Ayin that created the constellation Gedi, the constellation Capricorn. Gedi is the Hebrew word meaning young goat. And the Bet that created the planet Shabtai, the planet Saturn. Together, Ayin and Bet has a gematria of 72. 72 connects us to the 72 names of God. 72 names from the Tzaddikim, and many aspects connected to the name, to the number 72, and we will go into more details of that next week. Kabel rinat amcha sagvenu aharenu nora kufreshayan sintet tednun. This sequence spells two Hebrew words, kra satan, which means tear up satan. Tear up, eliminate the negative force that gives us free will. Tear up the negative force that's the leader of the other side. The same letters can be rearranged to spell sha'ar katan, which means small gates, and it's a hint to us to guard our gates, our eyes, our ears, our nose, our mouth, which are the entry points for the negative system. Na gibor dorshe yehudcha kevavat shamrem. Nun gimel dalet yud kashem. Nun gimel dalet has a gematria of 57. Which is the Hebrew word zan. Zan means sustenance, parnassah. Essentially, sustenance is the fulfillment of desire. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that takes back the energy of from the other side that gave them through our mistakes. This is a way to bring back into balance, bring back that wasted energy. Barchem tacharem This sequence connects us to the Sphira of Netzach. The attribute of Netzach is eternal victory. Eternal victory in the only war that matters. The war against your own desire to receive for yourself alone, your own selfishness. It's Wednesday. We would stop at this point and look at the angels of the day.
Number 10, the mouth.
Number 14, your right leg from the diaphragm to the knee. 15, the left leg from the diaphragm to the knee. 16 is your sex organ, but you go underneath your body and up your spine, and then back down your spine and back around to your sex organ. That's 16. And 17 is the feet from the knees to the toes. These names of God are healing, bringing the energy of healing, which is part of creation, to your body and your soul. Now we say the eighth verse, and we say this in a whisper. What this verse does is ground any excess energy so it doesn't stay around and bother you. So if you drew more of the energy of creation than your vessel can handle, this verse grounds that energy. Now I'm going to say it slowly and quietly in a whisper so you hear the level that it should be at. Now I'm going to say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. And I will do that in all of the classes so that you get to know what I'm saying. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vaed. That is the Ana B'Koach. That is the Kabbalist prayer. That is the energy of creation that has just been brought into this room. We do lots of meditations associated with it. Or you can just do the words across and not worry about the meditations. All the words that I added that weren't Hebrew was part of the meditation. You want to take 3 hours? Take 3 hours. You'll find it beneficial. You want to do it in 2 minutes? You'll find it beneficial. It's whatever works for you. And everybody is different, and every day of the week is different, and every month is different. It's all relative to where you are. You have 3 tools you've been given tonight. Hearing the Torah, 1 hour a week. Scanning the Zohar, 2 minutes to 10 minutes a day. Saying this, 2 minutes to 3 hours, depending on your time. Do you have 7 minutes a day, 1 hour a week, to try something as an experiment for 3 months? That's what I'm asking you to do. This works. Why it works, I can explain to you, but it won't make any sense to you, because it's not logical. Your eyes are the window to your soul, and these letters were designed to transfer metaphysical energy. When you're angry, you're out of balance. This will bring you back to balance. When you're hungry, you can eat food, or you can eat from the word of the mouth of God. These words, will it satisfy your soul? Yes. Will it satisfy your body? It actually does. Leave it to yourself. You're hungry, you say this, you're not so hungry. Is your hunger totally gone? Everybody is different. Where are you spiritually to be able to know that answer? Cause and effect. Obviously, I eat a lot because I'm overweight. So I don't stop eating and say this. By the same token, if I didn't have the money, and there have been times when I didn't have the money for food, I've said this, and I didn't feel hungry. Cause and effect. This changes the normal, natural law of cause and effect. It brings the energy of creation into your life. And it stays there until you change it, which means that you go back to your own selfishness. And we'll talk about that in 2 weeks, how to change your selfishness. Any questions?
Yes, I know it's overwhelming. I do know that. If you say it wrong, don't worry about it, because the last verse grounds it. Practice it. Experiment with it. Every class, we will start out with that same chant. You'll hear it over and over again. Go to YouTube. Listen to the song that resonates with you. Learn it. Memorize it. No, you won't get all of the meditations that I give you. And my meditations are not complete. You'll go to the YouTube and you'll find more meditations that work for you. Some of it will be in Spanish, so there's a lot of them in Spanish because this is speaking to people with Jewish souls, whether they're Jewish or not. It's what it's about. Let me give you this so you have it. It feels overwhelming. You're jumping back and forth between the different writings. But there's no way it can be just one thing, because next month it changes. Tomorrow the angels change. So you're always doing something different relative to the time you're in. But it has to be done that way, because creation includes those times.
Creation is an ongoing process.
It is an ongoing process. We bid you good night and have a beautiful week.